Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I got to tell you, there are times when you just want to give up and walk away, at least where journalism is concerned. And, of course, I don't hold myself out as a journalist. I'm partisan. I'm partisan about a lot of things. But this is a frustrating day. I believe it was Luke who said last night he was just going to stay. He wasn't going to get within 50 feet of a television set today. I can honestly say the same thing. I've done that. But I have to do show prep. I have to go through and try to find something that I hope will be engaging and worthy of conversation and discussion. And that means going to news websites. And today was just sickening. It was disgusting. It was pathetic. And to think that this all started with little baby Jessica down a well in 1987 in Midland, Texas. It did. Look at this. I mean, from CNN.com today. Jackson daughter, I love him so much. Live video now, Jackson Memorial Replay. Watch it now on CNN TV or live on CNN.com. Reaction to Michael Jackson's memorial in Los Angeles. Fans proved I'll be there for memorial. Fans across country mourn and the world. L.A. wants help paying for Jackson memorial. iReport.com. How are you honoring MJ today? Time, places to go to honor Michael Jackson. Jesus. And remembering a legend, Michael Jackson, the memorial. I'm Wolf Blitzer, and we are live in the Situation Room. So I'm thinking, okay, that's CNN, and, that's CNN. So let's try the far end of the spectrum. Let's go to Fox News. Jackson burial plans unclear, a king's farewell. Fox Forum, Michael Jackson and appreciation photos, Jackson Memorial, live shots inside the Staples Center tribute, videos, Mariah Carey, Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Jackson fans around world tune into Memorial. Fox Forum, the lessons of Michael Jackson. Damn, it's an entertainer, not Lao Tzu, okay? Jackson's death sparks fierce debate in what? Fox Forum taking sides after Michael Jackson's death. Video, Michael Jackson's casket carried in. Michael Jackson's casket carried in. Oh. Hanging prepositions at the end of sentences is something with which I will not put. Ugh. So that's Fox. Okay, well, those are cable news outlets, and they've got a 24/7 news cycle to fill. Surely to goodness, there's something on the for-profit news sites. ABC News, Joy and Pain, Emotional Memorial for King of Pop. King of Pop's star-studded memorial. Around the World Reaction. Mariah, Latifah, Lionel, praise Michael Jackson. Debbie Rowe, why she had Jackson's children. Jackson's track marks consistent with drugs. Who's who in Michael Jackson's world? Watch complete video coverage of MJ. Is ABC News saying that they had some sort of little fiber optic camera inside the casket?
I don't know. So that's ABC News. All right. So that's the Disney Network. You know, they're going to be like that. How about the network that brought us Edward R. Murrow? How about that? How about CBS? Nope. Millions join in viewing Jackson service. Video, Paris Jackson calls Michael best dad. King of Pop gets emotional send-off. How celebrities bid farewell. Jackson family says private goodbye. Millions join in viewing Jackson service. Obama calls... No, that's okay. That's actually a real news story. I'll be damned. So then, but that's for-profit media. You know, let's try something a little less profit-driven. How about NPR? Fans, family, fellow entertainers, say goodbye to Michael Jackson. Photo gallery. To NPR's credit, they've actually got real news stories up on the website as well. So that's some hope. Food TV saying goodbye to Michael Jackson's kitchen staff. House and Garden TV saying goodbye to the Neverland Ranch. Is it just me? Is this wholly unwarranted? I hate it when there's even a remote possibility of me agreeing with some right-wing nut. And I wouldn't call it agreement. But one of the most notorious right-wing nuts out there is Representative Peter King, Pete King, of New York. And he delivered this stunningly ignorant diatribe against Michael Jackson that at least gets one thing right. There's been entirely too much media coverage of this non-event. But the rest of it is pure hate on display for all to see and hear, thanks to Crooks and Liars. Video cuts of clips of little areas around Peter King's the district. Here he is.
Hi, this is Congressman Pete King. And yesterday I marched in two 4th of July parades in Wantore and West Speaker Park. Today I was taking a walk through Wantore, here at the American Legion Hall, firehouse down the street, a fire memorial a few blocks from here. And it really reminded me of the great men and women who sacrificed so much for our country. People fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan today, cops, firefighters.
Oh, what was that? Sacrificed so much for our country? Since you're a right wing nut, don't you mean our damn country? You remember the Joe Sam Wurzel Weasel Booger Bocker from his July? Yeah, our damn country. Remember that? That's what you have to call it now because you know he's a wing nut like you.
None of whom really get much credit, and yet for the last I don't know how long now, this lowlife, Michael Jackson, his name, his face, his picture, is all over the newspapers, television, radio. So we hear about is Michael Jackson, and let's knock out the psychobabble. This guy was a pervert, he was a child molester, he was a pedophile.
Thank God, you best be grateful that he's dead. Because what you've just done, Peter King, is called slander. Okay? Because let's get something straight. Michael Jackson settled a case, in a civil case, but he did not admit any liability for it. He was later tried criminally for some kiddie-related charges. He was acquitted. Oh, where's a nice, mean lawyer when you need one to sue a wingnut? But if you want to hear, you know, I hate to say that he's correct, but there has been too much coverage. But being a wingnut, he's not content to simply point that out. He has to pour a little bit of venom into the ears of his wingnut followers, just like, you know, just like Claudius poisoning Hamlet's daddy by pouring poison into his ear.
And to be giving this much coverage to him day in and day out, what does it say about us as our country? I just think we're too politically correct. No one wants to stand up and say, we don't need Michael Jackson. You know, he died, he had some talent, fine. There's people dying every day. There's men and women dying staying up.
But see, the thing is, when you set yourself up and you declare who we do and do not need, the next step is oven design, Pete King! Because it would be just as easy for me to sit here and say that we don't need you, you gaseous, puzzle-gutted, disgusting, right-wing piece of crap. You have spent all of your time in Congress trying to harm the working class in America, trying to do everything you can to enrich your contributor crony class buddies. And you do it on the backs of praise of people fighting and dying in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you make me sick.
Afghanistan, let's give them the credit they deserve. I really think the media has disgraced itself. I think that too many people in public life have made fools of themselves by talking about Michael Jackson as if he's some kind of hero. There's nothing good about this guy. Maybe a good singer, did some dancing, but the bottom line is, would you let your child or grandchild be in the same room with Michael Jackson?
No, the question, Pete King, is would I let my child or grandchild be in the same room with you? Because you're a right-wing repig-licking, Pete. And your party has an ugly habit of coddling criminals, pederasts, pedophiles, molesters, murderers, rapists, serial killers, liars. The real question is, why would any American mother or father or grandmother or grandfather ever leave their children alone with a repig-licking, Pete? Because at least Michael Jackson had the bucks to pay off a settlement if, in fact, he did do something improper. You'd just cry out that you were being persecuted for your, oh, I don't know, your Christianity. We know how you people operate, wingnut bastards.
What are we glorifying them for? So anyway, let's take some time out to really look to the people that do make us a great country. The men and women of the armed forces, police, firefighters, teachers who work in really rough neighborhoods, people who volunteer with dying cancer patients, people who work in AIDS clinics. They're the ones we should be glorifying, not some pervert like Michael Jackson.
Yeah, nice. So then, as Crooks and Liars reports, New York Newsday contacted Pete King to see if he'd was interested in any repentance or recalling any of it. To say that on, you know, the right at the time of a man's funeral. But then again, this is how the right wing operates. Do you remember when Jerry Garcia passed away? Now, granted, his memorial and or funeral or whatever was nothing compared to what went down today. But there was Flush Flimball, a few years away from having to admit the fact that he was a filthy little junkie and a liar and a hypocrite, declaring, "Oh, my friend Jerry Garcia is dead. Just another dead junkie. So what? Move on." This is how the right wing operates. This is what they vote for. This is what they hold up as heroes. And Dave Nywert is responsible for the post over at Crooks and Liars, and he observes at the end, he said, it must be pointed out that the adulation heaped upon Jackson is largely the product of the free enterprise system that Republicans like King vehemently defend at every nook and cranny, except that belonging to a black man.
Yeah, you know, he sang some songs and he was a dancer. Big whoop, so what?
Would he minimize, and I think this is a fair question, would he minimize a white man that way?
I mean, what if, and I'm not suggesting or wishing or anything, what if Lee Greenwood was to drop dead suddenly?
How would the right wing react to that?
Yeah, you remember Lee Greenwood.
The guy who has made an entire career out of one crappy-ass song, even parlayed it into a seat on the National Council for the Arts or some such, appointed by George W. Bush. Michael Jackson, regardless of anything else, had more talent in his toenail clippings than Lee Greenwood has in his entire body. Would Pete King say, "Hey, he sang a song, but let's move on," if it was this white guy? You know, I got to stop right there because I really can't stand much more of that dreck. But there is delightful, delicious irony in the lyrics of that miserable little chestnut. If tomorrow all the things I had were gone, I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. How many people all across America are actually living that scenario, and it's not nearly so charming as the as Lee Greenwood would make it sound.
To be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Wait a minute there, Lee. So, if you had to start tomorrow with just your children and your wife, and you'd lost everything you had, the one thing you'd do is you'd look up and see that flag and say, "Dang, a flag stands still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away."
Except the fact that the children are looking at you and saying, "Daddy, I'm hungry." And your baby daughter looks at you and says, "Daddy, I don't want to sleep in the car anymore." And your wife looks at you and says, "You know, honey, when I was showering the other day at the truck stop, I found a lump in my breast." And Daddy turns and says,
"And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you, and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA."
Yeah, shut up, kid. You don't like it living in a car? Well, at least we got a car to live in, honey. And I'm sorry, sweetheart. I'm sorry you got that lump in your breast, but you know, the Republican Party that we vote for every 2 to 4 years, they say that you don't need any health care to have that taken care of, and that, you know, if it doesn't work out and you get eaten alive with cancer, that's just too bad and you need to die. "And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free."
Honey, I think you've gone around the bend. I think you've gone off the deep end, honey. I think you need help.
I don't need any help. I'm going to lift myself up by my own bootstraps right out of this 1974 Dodge Monaco Brougham station wagon. That's what I'm going to do. Didn't you know? Hey, kids, don't tell me about being hungry no more. Hunger is a motivator. Didn't you hear that? That good, upstanding, right-wing, God-fearing Republican from Missouri tell us that? Why don't you quit talking about being hungry and let your hunger motivate you? That's what we need. Motivation. Quit thinking about yourself all the time and look up there at the old stars and stripes and just thank God you're free.
Now, I'm guessing Pete King would be shedding a few more tears had it been some white guy that had never been touched by talent in his life. Because he sings about that drivel and makes money off of faux patriotism so that knuckle-walking mouth breathers can go down to the polls and vote Republican against their own best interests.
Yeah, we're going to vote for them family values.
Well, honey, but I was hearing today that one of those family values Republicans, you know, that governor of South Carolina, honey, I was hearing that he flew off to Argentina and walked away from his job as governor so he could go have a fling with some Argentinian floozy and do the tango in Buenos Aires until the cows come home.
Well, you see, that's the way they are in Argentina. But when he gets back to America, he's going to have family values again. And I expect you to go into that voting booth. If we ever get an address back that we can register to vote with, we'll go and we'll keep voting because they stand up for God and country.
Hard to stomach. It is just plain hard to stomach. And our buddy David chimes in and says, Pete King, when a repig like that says anything is affected by things politically correct, what he's really saying is, I'm pissed that I can't call him N-word and other epithet word. We must all be clear on that. They hide behind that code phrase daily. Oh, yes, they do.
Well, see, that's what political correctness will get you. Oh, you mean that you can't call the Asian folks and the black folks and you can't call the Eastern European folks and you can't call the Italians
Well, how's about, Pete King, if I call you, what are you, Pete?
Wait a minute, you're from somewhere else too, Pete.
Yeah, that is code. Because, see, the right wing is just so mired in everything that it hates. And it's simply astonishing. So that's kind of where we start this evening. We know what wasn't news today. The question is, what was? And, you know, there's some happy news. Al Franken, taking the oath of office. He is now, that's Senator Franken to you right-wing goons. Senator Franken. By the way, you know, I asked the other day, what would Flush Flemball do on the day that Al Franken became a member of the United States Senate? Flush Flemball didn't have the guts to be on the air today. No kidding. Yeah, he had that the right-wing goon Mark Belling filling in for him. And of course, he carried the water, Mark Belling did, claiming that liberals destroyed Palin to fulfill a radical 1960s dream. Now, they had a revolution without firing a shot. This is not your father's Democratic Party. The old Democratic Party, and I don't mean of the 1930s or the 1940s, the old Democratic Party never would have tried any of this. Carter didn't even try any of this. This is a radicalization of public policy that is much more akin to what was in place in Western Europe and even in the Soviet Union. Man, get me the jug. It's... Yeah, we destroyed Sarah Palin. You and me. Just us. I also found time to say that there's no such thing as global warming. Wondering if people attending the Michael Jackson Memorial were victims of the Obama recession. It is ridiculous that Sarah Palin has had 15 ethics investigations and that no one has looked into why Tony Rezko, a convicted felon, bought an empty lot next to Barack Obama's house the same day Barack Obama bought his property. It is ridiculous that conservatives never hammered on that throughout the campaign, and it's ridiculous that we drop it now. You know, these people remind me a little bit more and more every day of just Monty Python gone bad. Arnold Mellish went to work one day when absolutely, you know, with the music, nothing happened. Is it a coincidence that Tony Rezko ordered an English muffin with strawberry jam on the same day that Barack Obama also ate an English muffin? Why do we not have an investigation of this? They're insane. They're entertaining, but they're insane. So on this day, when it seems that none of the for-profit media have time to report any news. By the way, Western China is imploding. Yeah. Remember the Uyghurs that we found out existed when it turned out that we had imprisoned a bunch of them permanently without any just cause or recourse to any sort of legal process? Remember that? Yeah, under the Bush administration, you know, there were some Uyghurs from Western China who were in the wrong place at the wrong time and got sold to some American soldiers for $5,000 cash American. And then we just warehoused them after we tortured them a bit, of course. And then started talking about how we couldn't send them home. Yeah, well, that's when we learned who Uyghurs were. And Uyghurs are rather upset in their home their home province in Western China, because among other things, the Chinese government has been resettling ethnic Han Chinese into the Uyghur province to the point where the Uyghurs are now a minority in their own capital city, and there is rioting going on, and there have been killings, murder, death. Not nearly as interesting as the funeral of the god of pop. No, not by a long shot. So that's where the evening begins, and that is where, news. We'll try to find some news. And I hope you will bring some as well. Your emails, of course, as well, all through the show. You know the addy, bobkincaid@gmail.com, BOBKINCAID, bobkincaid@gmail.com. I am so not going to play the rest of God Bless the USA, and you can thank me for that later. That was more than enough. But shoot the emails in, make the phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D, KSON. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be right back. That seems somehow appropriate, David Bowie, to get things. Love that song. But anyway, I'll tell you what. We'll go to Flush Flimball and some eliminationist news here in just a moment. But right now, we're going to go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there. calling from the beautiful deserts of Arizona. It's Fancy Free.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Hey, babe. You know what? I was never a major Michael Jackson fan, but I do have a tremendous sense of someone who was wronged on this. That, you know, here was this small child who was a golden goose and well trained by a father with his belt, and Michael ended up like a zoo animal.
Well, you know, I was thinking the other day, Fancy. Think about the end of Mozart.
Oh yeah, and you know,
it's really the same paradigm. Only it's a little white Austrian kid instead of a little black kid from Detroit. But they both meet untimely ends, and they both got domineering fathers who just about beat their genius into them.
Gloria Steinem wrote about Marilyn Monroe, and one of the lines she had there was, "No one ever asked Marilyn what she wanted." And that to me, Elvis, Marilyn,
Garland.
Judy Garland. These wonderful little golden goose children who made a lot of money for other people and were never asked,
"What do you want?
Who are you and what do you want?" And I think I have to have a certain amount of compassion.
Well, see, that's why you're liberal, progressive, decent human being, because you can sort of look beyond the all the media hype and all the foo-frah and hurrah and huzzah, and you can realize that there was a human being back there.
I kind of went a little distressed there when I understood that Michael's kids were going to his mother, and I didn't realize that she lived separately from his father. And my first thought was, oh, my God, Grandpa's going to get out the belt and make some more little talent here.
Oh, dear God. And they are beautiful young children, too.
You know, and there's a dilemma of the golden goose child.
There absolutely is. And
there's another factor in here, and I think a lot of folks speculate that probably, you know, under different circumstances, Michael was gay. You know, he was, but his mother was a member of Jehovah's Witnesses,
mm-hmm.
And you can't be gay.
No, you can't. No,
you cannot be gay. And I understand, and I've heard tales. I don't know how true this is, that he actually witnessed that he went from door to door in disguise to get that to do that thing. And you know how many people, and I know a lot of folks, gay folks, who got it together, married, and had lovely families. And this doesn't question that they don't love their children, their spouses, but they're still gay.
Yeah, sure. And you know, I've wondered, I'm not, as I'm sure you're not, I'm something less than satisfied with any sort of duality that tries to describe human sexuality. As if, you know, there's an on and an off switch, or, you know, it's that human beings are all binary code. We're either male or female or gay or straight. I don't know
chocolate or vanilla.
Right.
36 flavors.
Right. If you consider the childhood of Michael Jackson that you just described, Fancy, and you consider, and you try to consider human sexuality in that light, at what point in time did Michael Jackson ever get an opportunity to even figure out what sexuality was? Because, you know, from the first time that he sang "I'll Be There," little girls and little boys all over the country were swooning. How can you have an honest relationship with someone whose first task, they think, is to give you sufficient worship?
Yeah.
And, you know, my thesis is that you cannot. You know, how can you describe heterosexual, the homosexual, or bisexual, or any kind of sexuality with regard to a Michael Jackson or an Elvis or...
you know, pick one.
One possible theory here is that we saw Michael regress to become more and more and more childlike in his presentation of who he was. And that may have happened to him sexually, too.
It may very well have.
You know, I really have questions as to whether there was a pedophilia there, because his defense was so casual. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I have wondered, you know, when you consider the general profile, and I realize I'm on shaky ground here, but when you consider the general profile of a male child sexual abuser, it ain't Michael Jackson.
I think that was more like, I mean, I think he was another child. You know, and I don't know about the rest of the world, but I discovered a lot of my sexuality poking other little girls. You know, does this feel good? Yeah, that feels really good. You know, at a very early age. You know, thank God for summer camp.
Well, you know, that's why it's called childhood experimentation. Because it's in the nature of human experience. But what you get with Michael, we're all speculating, but I surmise that what happened here, and frankly, I would like this to go beyond the concept of Michael Jackson himself and talk about the agony of the closet, among other things. Because he never had a childhood. He never had an opportunity to develop normally.
And he was told who he would be.
Yes.
You know, I have a friend whose parents were very controlling. And one of my favorites is he'd say to his father, he'd say, "I'm hungry." And his father would say, "No, you're not. I'll tell you when you're hungry." And that's kind of like Michael's whole life. "I feel this way." "No, you don't. I'll tell you how you're going to feel."
"Daddy, I don't want to dance today." Belt comes off. "You sure you don't want to dance today, Michael?"
Yeah. Yeah, and I keep going back to poor little... I have a real thing about poor little Marilyn Monroe and that wonderful line, "Nobody ever asked Marilyn what she wanted." Because I think she was a tremendously talented actress.
Oh, she was brilliant, I thought. I mean, just...
Her comedic timing was amazing. And she was treated as a commodity. And very sad for that, and I think there's a certain sadness.
When you consider her comedic timing, I'm sure there will are people who will disagree with me, but when you consider her comedic timing, you know who she reminds me of more than anybody else is probably Gracie Allen. And the difference being that Gracie Allen had George Burns there, who was a genius in his own right, playing the straight man, but because he understood that Gracie was the funny.
He knew how to put her there and get it, yes.
And he was very much concerned with what did Gracie want.
Yeah.
You know, till the day he died, he went out to whatever cemetery where her mausoleum was and had a chat with Gracie every day. And that was what was missing from Marilyn's life. It was, frankly, what was missing probably from Michael Jackson's life. It was certainly what was missing from Elvis's life. You know, is to have someone with whom you interact as a human being. Not somebody who will say, "Hey, King, you want another peanut butter and banana sandwich? Oh, bring me one of those." No.
Yeah, I often feel that people who are quite successful are not necessarily happy people. And that's a... Unless you have some autonomy in your own life, unless you know who you are.
Exactly, and there is
find out who you are.
There's a broader inquiry into human nature here. There's something that's been completely overshadowed and will probably not mean much to a great number of our audience is the fact that over the 4th of July weekend, a profoundly talented athlete was apparently killed in a murder-suicide.
McNair?
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's that situation where, you know, when you're great at something and you have to stop doing it, If you don't have some sort of backup to make a life for yourself, there's going to be trouble. For instance, you know, he had been Steve McNair had been married to a wonderful woman for years and had had a family with her, and it was a
supposedly a strong family, but they had become estranged. And, you know, interestingly enough, he had only retired from football in the last few years. And if you've had to do one thing, you know, look at Brett Favre. Brett Favre couldn't stay retired. He had to come back and play football last season. Because whether it's football or baseball, basketball, film, you know, what happens to a starlet who has been prized for her beauty when her beauty, like a rose on the fades?
Well, Hartman made an interesting observation about wealthy people and friendship. And he said he had a friend who was, you know, a nice average guy whose father invented something, and the guy ended up inheriting and becoming quite wealthy. And he always wondered, do people like me because I'm me, or do they see me as an investment opportunity? And I think that must be another thing, looking at Michael, Marilyn, McNair. Are the people around you there because they like you? Or is it that they want to use you?
And to what extent has a person had the opportunity to develop something that is worth liking? I'll tell you one of the most stunning, not stunning, but one of the most touching things coming out of the Steve McNair tragedy were the remarks of Tennessee Titans head football coach Jeff Fisher. Our buddy David in Tennessee sent me the link to his press conference, and I watched that video. And frankly, I was impressed as all get out by Jeff Fisher, because he showed himself to be a person who has worked on being a human being, as opposed to just working on being a coach or working on being a guy who knows football. Sure, he knows all those things, but it's obvious in watching the press conference that he knows a lot more about his own human nature as well. So you know what happens when, you know, I joke for instance, Fancy, about, you know, if the lights ever go off here, it's going to be hell for my family, because they're going to have to listen to me do the show for 3 hours a night, whether there's a microphone or not.
They're with a hairbrush, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Talking into that hairbrush. You've done that.
And I did it too.
I was a TV producer for a number of years.
So you know. And, you know, whether it's going off to, and this is just the way that I think, whether it's going off to volunteer with some organization serving hurting people in some far-flung land, or going off and pursuing your passion to be a chef or an archaeologist Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
He owns a vineyard. And I don't think it's not just an investment opportunity. He enjoys making wine. And you've got somewhere along the way, you've got to find something that defines you, something that you can define, as opposed to letting the world define you.
And I think for a lot of people who are successful and young at an early age, who are handled and managed, that part gets missing. And if you don't get a chance to remediate it at some place, my comment at first that you're some sort of animal in the zoo. Lions don't do this in nature. That you're forced into living in that emotional cage and becoming somewhat warped. I have one story for you before you go. When you were talking with, let's not end a sentence with a preposition.
Yes.
This I will not.
Up with which I will not put.
Up put. I've been married several times and acquired some wonderful family along the way, all of which I stayed close to. And one of my nephews, an adult nephew, is in the bondage, SM, whatever business, has a wonderful website, which I won't plug.
Okay.
And he and his lady wrote...
You can send it to me in an email. I'm kidding.
Well, no, Mike's a great guy. And so he and his lady wrote a book, and they said, you know, would you proofread the book? And I said, yeah, it'd be a pleasure, sure. So here I'm marking up his book, and I'm talking to my daughter, who's also, among other things, been an English major. And I said, I'm doing a markup on Michael's book. I said, I'm saving his readers from ending sentences with prepositions and the dreaded dangling participle, and et cetera. And she said, Mom, I don't think his readers really care about dangling participles. So it's
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, but we saved them.
Right. And she's got a future in stand-up if she can come up with one of those off the cuff.
Oh, she's great. She's great. She was the kid who when she was little, said, oh, I hope that Twilight Zone stays on long enough for me to write for it. So this was, you know, life goal. And she ended up in the literary world, so she's there. But I said, since this does not trip my trigger, there were moments, and I found it very boring. I said, there were moments I longed for a good technical manual. But, which gets us back to different strokes for different folks.
Sure. And, yeah, you, come on. There had to be a few moments in editing the book, Fancy, where you, they do that?
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm putting in? I'm putting in marginal notes, and at one point I wrote in, and this is my nephew, I wrote in, and I said, I want to see a model of antibacterial soap in this scene, because there are people who are going to follow your guidelines, and vaginal infections are not erotic, darling. And so I was writing also health and safety along with...
Yeah, you read those letters and so forth, and then I covered him in whipped cream, and no, that stuff ferments. It curdles.
Not a good idea. And sticky.
you wind up sticky, broken, confused. Yeah.
Oh, well. But on the other hand, try everything once, and the fun thing's twice.
Exactly. And if you're not sure... And if you're,
people are scaring the horses.
So very true. So true.
Now, you remember, originally I'm from Texas.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, don't
know what.
Well, yeah, and in fact, Texas has statutes about worrying the horses, doesn't it?
Yeah. Just be careful with...
I'll never forget the first time I saw the West Virginia law against worrying sheep.
That's true.
And I have never, you know, because I was just sitting there reading it, and I was thinking, how do you know when a sheep is worried?
You stand there by the field and you say, did you ever wonder? Did it ever occur to you?
Bah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, I guess you can hear it in the voice. Bah.
I go down to Texas. I got a girlfriend who, you know, started out to, you know, like most of us, started out doing one thing and ended up doing another. And she's got a little acreage down there in South Texas, down below Houston. And, never planned to have Shetlands, but she does. And she runs a little herd from 5 to 9 show horses, show Shetlands, which are sweet. They really are very sweet little animals.
Are they really? I always heard the Shetlands were just so doggone mean. Maybe that's because they're given to mean children.
No, Shetlands are strong. They were mine workers in the Shetland Islands. Went down in the mines and never came out. Pulled the carts. They're very, very strong, very, very robust, very smart, and if treated well, they're lovely animals. But people don't just train or treat them. They say, oh, little horse, little kid, here you go. And the kid says, my horsey, punch, poke, kick, and that's where you get your mean horse. And if my friend's horses are just deer, walk around with a carrot and you get a new best friend. And they're very, very sweet and they do kid parties. But it's kind of a, no, they're not mean by nature. They're only mean if you worry them. That's...
Maybe another word for that is, you know, it torment them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about, well, I've enjoyed these little guys, and I go down and sit. As I said, I go sit and watch the horses eat grass, and I do a little pony therapy down there on the farm, and then I can come back into my life again. Which we are, you know, you've seen me bitching in the chat room. This is a beautiful place, and usually we have no humidity whatsoever, and the coolers work just fine, and everybody's happy, except for a few weeks out of the year, and we're there.
And it's miserable.
Oh, it's humid. And it's not nice.
Well, I think Kate mentioned that the other night because, you know, she's down on the desert, too.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, we're at 36% humidity, and everybody back east goes, that's humid.
Well, we're dying, of course.
Yeah, right, and it's miserable for you.
Oh. And, you know,
yeah, what'd she say? She didn't know whether she wanted to breathe the air or lick it?
Yeah exactly. Kate has a wonderful turn of phrase. I love what she's... We send little strange notes to one another from time to time.
Oh, that's... That's another one of the beautiful things about the Horn Fancy is that these little individual personal email networks have arisen among me and among the various and sundry listeners and members of the Horn family, and without fail, what I see is that and it's so inspiring, especially when you go and you look at a right wing message board or something or. You know, the kind of stuff that we see around here with mountaintop removal advocates and the way they write. We are just delightfully literate. And we actually put effort into the words that we send in an email. It's funny. I can't imagine anybody in the Horn family being actively involved in text messaging on phones because, you know, that you, the letter U.
Y-O-U.
Yeah, I do. And I just will not use the numeral 4 in place of the preposition.
Yeah, I have a lot of thought going on. I watched the film from the Kayford Mountain, and I have a certain amount of compassion for those nasty little folks who really weren't able to do much except make middle finger signs and invective. But
me too. And it all kind of went out the window. And this probably just sort of betrays me as failing in my attempts at humanity. I just sort of dropped it all in the middle of the road and went, nah, okay, you buddy. When he made that slashing throat gesture and said, F you and your kid.
Yeah. And my first thought was, gosh, you must have a really tiny apparatus to have to act with that. You know?
I think you're the second person to make that observation. Both of them have been female so far.
I would think so. I would think that... You know, he's making up for some kind of deficiency.
Well, see, the other funny thing out of all this is that, or not funny, but interesting thing out of all this is I had that email from our good buddy Spike yesterday in which he said the guy looks more like a skinhead than anything else. And lo and behold, guess what? I find out today, no names or anything, apparently he's got a big old rebel flag. How did we know? But, I go back, and this, you know, what we're talking specifically about that little piece of footage, but on the other hand, Fancy, isn't this something that extends across the broad spectrum of how we respond to the right wing? I mean, I get so disgusted, and just...
Okay, let me give you another observation on that.
All right.
I'm in a 12-step discipline, have been for a number of years, you know that. And I've referenced it a number of times in email, et cetera. And when you're in a 12-step discipline, there are certain rules you cannot break. You cannot lie. You know, you cannot cheat. You cannot do certain things because to do that would hurt me. That would be me hurting me. So I can't do it. And yet I have to live in a world with people who do lie and do cheat and do things that I can't do. And that's a real conundrum sometimes. Because with my mouth, I could sit there and reduce, you know, Mr. Point of Finger and shout invectives down to, well, I could just discuss the minuscule properties of his apparatus. And my assumption of how all his multiple ex-wives might feel about him. And I can't do that. I mean, it would hurt me. And I think that's where we end up as liberals in many cases, that we have empathy, that greed is not the first prompting motivation in everything. Which brings me back to Michael Jackson one more time. I do want to mention this guy was a philanthropist. he put an awful lot of his wealth into philanthropies.
Yes, he did, and that was noted repeatedly.
And good for him. As I said, I was never a fan, but that's just because I'm not a fan. Oh, the other thing I want you to look for, Capital Steps.
Oh, I love them.
Has a wonderful "I'm proud to be an American." You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I haven't heard it, but they've got a Lee Greenwood parody out there.
I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
Well, that certainly saves me from having to write the lyric and then badger John Fox about it.
I'll look for it and send it to you. Maybe we can get it today. Yeah, it's a wonderful, about 4 years ago. Really nice Lee Greenwood take on that. Hooray for the Forever of the Steps.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's so nice to hear from you, and I'm glad you rang in.
Hey, I may do it again in another few years.
You know what? Whenever the spirit moves you.
I'm watching. I don't watch TV much. I turn it on at night a little bit, but I thought, okay, let's see. This is, you know, a time. It's a cultural. It's like watching the Christmas Mass from the Vatican when you're not Catholic. You do it.
I've been known to do it.
You know. It's not my thing, but it's somebody's thing, and isn't that interesting? And I watched this thing today, and one, I was impressed with the decorum, that by and large, the people were very respectful. I was impressed that I didn't see Joe Jackson speak, did you?
No, I did not.
I think somebody sat on him.
I don't know if he was welcome to. Because I think everybody, at this point in time, everybody knew what his role in all of this was. You know, for talking about Michael's childhood and youth, they brought in Berry Gordy.
Yeah, that was impressive. I know that Joe Jackson spoke a few weeks ago, and he said, well, I want to discuss this new record label and how you can buy it and put money in my pocket. You know, and I'm just finding, you know, ooh.
Oh, and by the way, I got to take you backwards just for a minute, Fancy, because you know, people do participate in these conversations by email, and David in Tennessee has weighed in.
Hi, David.
And he says Fancy offered that talking about the Masseyite thug on the hill. He said Fancy offered that said pig was small of apparatus. Well, that fellow doesn't actually know. If you saw the film, the video, you know that some of his parts have made it impossible to see certain other of his parts for so long, he's not really sure how much is down there.
Okay, this is for David in Tennessee. The fat guy's in the doctor's office, naked. And the doctor looks at him and he says, you're going to have to diet. And the guy looks down and he says, what color is it now?
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'll be here for a week.
Yeah, don't try the veal. Fancy, that was we got to end on that.
It's true. Love and kisses. All right. Best, Agnes.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, sweetie.
From the deserts of Arizona, that is our pal Fancy Free. You've got to tie it. Why? What color is? Oh, man. I'm hanging on to that one. I am so hanging on to that one. So we bring the first hour to a close. And a darn fine one it was. Be part of this. We kid it. For God's sakes, let's have a laugh. Let's have a little fun before it gets all serious again. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. On the way, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We'll get started with hour two here in just a minute. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, July 7, 2009.
Will the climate change in the Senate over climate change legislation?
Not bloody likely.
ExxonMobil pays up and pays off.
About time.
Plus, nuclear power versus summer.
I got my money on summer. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report.
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Spin down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All
okay, it's getting hot out there.
Yes.
What do you have for us today?
Well, the U.S. Senate today begins what promises to be heated negotiations over the American Clean Energy and Security Act, also known as Waxman-Markey, after narrowly winning passage a few weeks ago in the House of Representatives by only 7 votes. The bill's first hearing is today in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. The congressional newspaper The Hill says conservative Democrats pose the highest risk to the president's agenda. During the fight in the House, some congressmen said phone calls they received were stacked hard against the bill. So call your senators to make your voice heard. We have that number online at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
Conservative Democrats, you say?
Yes.
I would call them corporatist Democrats. I don't know if there's anything conservative about them. That's just me.
It'll destroy jobs and cost middle-class families $1,800 a year every time you turn on a switch. And Tom Perriello's voting with Obama and with Nancy Pelosi over and over.
That is part of an attack ad from the National Republican Congressional Committee targeting House members who voted for the bill, especially vulnerable Democrats, many of them freshmen in their first terms. But in this instance, a Roanoke, Virginia television station refused to run that ad from the NRCC against freshman Democrat Tom Perriello after an outcry that it contained numerous factual errors.
Good for them.
Representative Perriello defends his vote in an interview with Politico, saying the Republicans may win some seats because of that vote, but they can't regain their souls for demagoguing the issue.
And one of the inaccuracies we have reported over and over again, but since the Republicans are reporting it over and over again, it seems we ought to mention it. He notes here in this ad, it'll cost Americans $1,800 every time they turn on a switch.
Yes, the amounts vary depending upon who you're talking to. From the Republicans, has gone all the way up to $4,000,
right.
And it's a purposeful misrepresentation that the Republicans know that they are doing of an MIT study where the lead researcher has actually asked the Republicans constantly, publicly, to stop misusing his study.
Yeah, and I hate that we have to point that out over and over again, but I guess we have to.
Yes, we do.
But they're
going
to keep lying about it if we don't.
Yes, they will. Last week, ExxonMobil announced they would not appeal a lower court ruling and will pay $400 million in interest on punitive damages from the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the worst in the nation's history, after nearly 20 years of litigation. They should be able to afford the payment as the world's most profitable company. ExxonMobil pulled in $45 billion, that's with a B, in profit alone for the year 2008, and it's less than the $500 million retirement bonus paid to outgoing CEO Lee Raymond in 2005.
Oh, man.
And also, according to an analysis of company records by the Telegraph UK, ExxonMobil is still funding climate change denial groups, although at a much reduced level. The oil giant had pledged in 2006 to cut funding to such organizations after receiving heavy criticism from the venerable British scientific organization, the Royal Society. A similar review of Exxon's spending by the Center for American Progress shows that ExxonMobil also spends more money advertising its clean energy initiatives than it actually spends on researching clean energy itself.
And of course, you put clean energy initiatives in air quotes.
Yes.
There. And the fact is, ExxonMobil was told they would have to pay how much originally for the Exxon?
$5 billion, but the Supreme Court reduced that to $500 million last year.
$500 million, and now, very thoughtful, they're not going to challenge the interest on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
France is finding it necessary to buy electricity from Britain this year because an early summer heat wave is forcing a third of France's nuclear power plants to be shut down. Nuclear power provides the majority of electricity for France, but many of its nuclear power plants are located inland and must use cold river water to keep their reactor cores cool. But when the river heats up, the reactors must be shut down.
Well, I thought that France's nuclear power, I thought the Republicans told us that was our solution to all of our woes here, to build more nuclear. We'd be fine.
Well, that is certainly an issue with the nuclear power model we currently have. France's nuclear power plants are also subject to strict regulations regarding the temperature of water that can be discharged from the reactors to avoid killing off aquatic life in the river. And this is not the first time. During the killer heat wave in Europe in 2003, the majority of France's power plants had to be shut down due to high water temperatures at the peak of electricity use.
Okay, but now I understand. It's those regulations. They can't release that hot water during the summer. We wouldn't have that problem here in the U.S. We would just get rid of the regulations.
Except we did. Tennessee saw a similar situation in 2007 when the Tennessee River was too hot to cool the reactor.
Uh-huh.
You know how you have to buy a new cell phone charger every time you get a new cell phone? Millions are discarded every year. Now, that's a lot of toxic electronic waste. So the European Union has reached a voluntary agreement with cell phone manufacturers to create a single common universal cell phone charger that would work across all cell phone models that would cut down on electronics waste. Now, the EU is following a standard that was set by China 2 years ago. The standardized charger should be on the market by 2010 in Europe. No word yet on whether U.S. manufacturers will follow suit.
You're such a Euro lover. Their cell phones, their nuclear power. Why do you hate America, Desi Doyen? For much more on all of that, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com, or drop us email at greennews@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your hot, hot, hot Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. We are almost halfway through tonight's edition of the program. Chime in if you've got something to add. You are more than welcome. This is, after all, conversation radio. It is radio like nothing else anywhere else. Not to mention the fact that the Horn is also the oldest now, really, the oldest liberal radio network in the country. Not bad, huh? Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah, really quite amazing considering how we do it. We are into July. We'd like to put August in our pocket, and by that I mean we would like to know that August is going to happen. That depends largely upon you, and as a consequence, if you can or are inclined, you might want to hit the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, or the snail mail address that is also there. We're really, really excited about what's coming up in August with our trip to Netroots Nation being the exclusive streaming content provider for that event. It's going to blow your mind when you see what goes into it. It's going to be absolutely stunning. Let's see, quick couple of emails.
David in Tennessee, in response to Fancy's closing joke, that get that woman a toaster. We David is the official passer out of toasters for great commentary offerings. And from another David, this being David in South Carolina, this observation, and I think this is quite legitimate. Talking about contrasting, and I never would have thought of this, frankly, but contrasting Michael Jackson's alleged misdeeds with those of another dead guy, Strom Thurmond. David observes Michael Jackson was tried in a court of law and found not guilty on all charges. Strom Thurmond, on the other hand, was never charged with sexual assault when there is documented proof of his actions. Quote, Essie Mae Washington Williams, a 78-year-old retired schoolteacher in Los Angeles, California, revealed her relationship to the former segregationist after decades of silence, unquote. All the right-wing haters fail to mention Thurmond's actions, and what's even worse is these crimes against women of African descent were condoned in South Carolina and throughout the South. Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Marty said, please don't defile Monty Python by linking them even satirically to the right-wingers. All right, point taken. My apologies. And then our pop culture correspondent, we have now heard from all three Davids. David from Maine chimed in, and based upon Fancy's having mentioned it, got it for me, so let's take a minute and give a listen to some great parody. Well, in a minute.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way. And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103, and I'll gladly park so close to you when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV. Congestion, but hey, I'll get there alive. So don't pester me with questions like, what would Gandhi drive? And you won't catch me in Starbucks if I need a drink or snack. When I bought this ship, she came equipped with a Starbucks in the back. And I'm proud to be an American with a car that fits my rear. The cash I put down could have fed a town in Somalia for a year. I'd gladly go and fight Saddam. He'd lose a war with me. You'll be stuck in mud when he sends his scud, but not my SUV.
Yep, that's definitely everything that Fancy said it was. Oh, that's beautiful. That's just gorgeous. Damn funny is what it is. Now, let me backtrack to last night for just a minute, if you don't mind. We were talking about the right-wing humor a little bit. And lo and behold, it was one of those prophecy moments when I look in my email box this morning, and what do I see? Headlines from the year 2017. Now, bear in mind, this is humor, and it was, you can tell just because of the way it's written. Well, you tell me. Did a liberal and progressive write this, or did a right-wing conservative write this? This is supposed to be funny. Okay, we're having a teachable moment.
Thank you. everybody. Welcome aboard. John Fox here, taking over for Rob Kincaid from Woy Woy up in the beautiful central coast of New South Wales. You know, these things happen. It appears that Bob has lost his internet, so I'm going to fill in here for a while as he waits to get back on. These are the things that happen when you're kind of running, you know, on the edge of technology and, you know, geez, you lose that internet connection and, well, internet radio is screwed! And my connection has not been all that shiny this morning, so I'm hoping that this will maintain for a bit. And you know, I really wish I got it repaired, this mic cable that was going out on me the other night. And someone was saying they're not familiar with this song that's playing at the moment. Well, then you haven't listened to my show. This is the Mighty Mighty Soundgarden, and outshined off of Bad Motorfinger. One of my most favorite noises in the world. So here we go. I have nothing planned, because, well, I wasn't planning to be here, but that's all right. you know, bloody hell. Bob talking about a whole bunch of different things. You know, I told this story when I was filling in for Bob a couple weeks ago, you know, talking about, you know, Michael Jackson and never having a childhood and all that. And it's something that I always thought of, you know, and when his father, you know, had that little press conference and thought, hey, you know, I'm going to push my new label. It just kind of reaffirmed a few of the things that I always thought about that family, that, and, you know, where the you got a kid who ends up being the golden goose, and how you can end up not having a childhood at all. And I remember being told this story when I was a young buck of an aspiring audio engineer back in the very late 80s, and I ended up going to, I was doing an internship at a studio in West Orange, New Jersey, and the guy that I worked for, we went to another studio to, pardon me, I'm just checking out some patching here because, well, anyway. I go to this studio where, you know, many, 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 many big albums were recorded. I can't remember the name of the studio at the moment, but, you know, it's one of these places you walk in and the gold and platinum records are up, and, you know, there was actually a fair few of different Jackson records up there, some of Jermaine stuff, and there was what looked like a fairly recent picture of Michael and Jermaine and a few other heavyweights in the studio. And I said, oh, what was, you had Michael Jackson here. What was that like? He said, man, he said, first of all, the guy's just amazing in the studio. He can kick stuff out. No problem. He's a kind of a one take master if he knows what's happening. And, but he said, I'll tell you, you know, the guy who ran the studio was saying, you know, it must suck to be Michael Jackson. Because they were doing a session. It was in this, you know, small Jersey suburban town off a back street on a Sunday, you know, and in a lot of places in New Jersey at this time in history, still had a lot of blue laws where, you know, a lot of businesses aren't open on a Sunday, so it's like really quiet. But one of the few places that was open is just like across the road was this local farmer's, you know, fruit and vegetable market. And the studio had gone and bought a whole bunch of fresh fruit and stuff and laid it out in the studio. And Michael was just going nuts on these, on these, you know, seasonal grapes, you know, and just absolutely destroying them. And he ended up suddenly realizing that personally basically had killed, like, you know, like 4 pounds of bloody grapes, and says, where did you get these? I'd really like to get some more. And, you know, I said, oh, we just got them across the road. I'll send one of the studio hands over to get some. He says, nah. He says, I'll go get them. Now, mind you, we're talking like catty corner across a road, like maybe about 300 yards. And by the time he gets into the fruit market, telephones have started ringing, all this crazy stuff. And by the time he got out, the entire street was just absolutely chockers worth of people. He couldn't even get back to the studio. The engineers and everybody in the studio had to go out and actually surround him and physically drag him back in as his clothes were being torn. And he comes in and they're like, you know, so sorry, you know. And he was apologizing for creating the kerfuffle. And, you know, that story always kind of left it in my mind that this guy's never had a normal life. Am I rebuffering really bad, folks? Net connection over here has been really, really shaky the last couple of weeks. I don't know what's going on. My provider actually said that they were going to swap out a router near me. But we have the problem of the half-publicly owned telephone company that owns all the infrastructure, so sometimes. But Lottie's saying we're rocking. Okay, I've seen a little bit of buffer back here. We've talked about it, Bob and I, and removing the chat from the streaming machine was probably a good idea. So we'll see how this works out. But anyway, you know, I always ended up giving Michael Jackson a bit of slack after getting this firsthand account of, you know, the guy just wanted to go across the road and get some bloody grapes. David.
Could be sabotage, John.
No, mate, I doubt it. I actually doubt it. And they're also messing around with some crazy profanity filtering here and whatnot, which will never work. It'll never work to actually try and get ISPs to do, you know, protection of children is just actually a bit ridiculous. It needs to be done at the end user. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. But, you know, the whole media mess around, you know, there's been so much other news going on. And not saying that, you know, a real human, you know, no matter what you might think of Michael Jackson and whatnot, his music connected with people. This is, you know, this is what the power of music is. And, yeah, it's a big story and people are curious about it. But when the major media outlets go out on this freaking feeding frenzy of, this'll just get us ratings, not necessarily that it's really the most important news of the day. You know, it's a bit sick, it's a bit sad, and it shows quite nakedly that news should not be a commercial enterprise. Wasn't I talking about this on Sunday, you know, the way Pacifica Radio does things, you know, they're a not-for-profit. Doesn't mean that they can't have a lot of money go through. It's just that they're not-for-profit. Phase 5, one of my fellow Australians in the chat room saying, is that the $100 million government nanny filter that took a 16-year-old 12 minutes to crack? Exactly, mate. Exactly. Exactly. It's the unfortunate thing, you know. We got rid of the fascists here when we knocked John Howard's government out. But now, unfortunately, you know, the conservative side, one of their gripes that they have about labor is true. We end up with a bit of the nanny state thing going on, and so we've had this thing of, you know, the big bugaboo at the moment, which is, you know, child pornography and pedophiles. And, you know, so they end up reacting to this and trying to come up with some sort of, you know, major initiative. And my internet provider, an outfit called iiNet, actually volunteered to install the filters first to prove that it was a bad idea, which I thought was a really, really interesting way to go about it. They're saying, we totally disagree with this, but tell you what, give us the stuff first, and we'll show you what a bad idea it is, because it's just not going to work, and it's going to end up impacting people's speeds and all this other kind of thing. So, you know, you want to block things from your kids, you do it on your end. It's ridiculous. And not only that, I've seen a list of the so-called bad sites, and very few of them were porn related. Lots more had to do more with freedom of information, and that gets to be a bit scary. Just reading notes on the streamer. Gail and I were watching a DVD the other night, and I've run into this situation where on my laptop I've swapped around too many times on, you know, which region code I'm on. And I started thinking, this whole thing about, you know, we're talking about copy protection here in the chat room. And I'm sitting there thinking, why is it that movies get to make content be only playable in certain countries when I can buy a CD anywhere and not have to worry about my player being set up for whatever country the CD was bought in? Why, you know, what's with the double standard? Why is it that if I'm traveling and I end up buying a film while I'm in the UK, that it won't play on my Australian player? Yeah, Cossack. There is a profanity filter. It's called an on-off switch. That's there you're getting right into the heart of the situation there, man. You don't like it, turn it off. You don't have to be connected to it. Yes, Lottie, we are on PAL here, which is actually a much better picture than NTSC. Just like the United States, similarly, with only having 110 volts as your power, for some reason you insist on sticking with older, less viable technology because it allows you some sort of control in a dedicated market. Because I can tell you right now, in the work that I used to do, production work like I used to, running on 110 is just a bit of a joke. But hey. Anyway, we're going all kinds of all around the block. I'm getting reports in from my missus at work saying that no buffering problems on her end, which is a good thing. And I'll tell you what, I am going to take the top of the hour break here in a second, and I'm going to actually see if I can dig up another mic cable so I don't have to sit here holding this one together. And I'll try and fix that. But anyway, we're doing what we can. So if you're just getting back on the stream, Bob Kincaid lost his internet connection. John Fox here in Australia. I keep wanting from force of habit to say Sydney, and I'm not in Sydney anymore. Thank goodness. I'm out of the polluted shithole. anybody catch Letterman last night and his little thing on Palin? I loved it. You know, his almost his opening line on it was like, something I said? As he gets older, Dave is kind of letting go. He's not being so concerned about what people might think of what he says. And he's a little more open to actually showing what his politics are, which I think is just absolutely brilliant. And his audience obviously thinks Palin's a whack job. Yes, Sophie, Letterman married his girlfriend just a couple of months ago. And he announced it on the show like, oh, you know what I did this weekend? But, you know, and on the day that actually, I'm going all over the place. This is what happens when you end up sitting there going, hey, John, can you go and connect and take over the show like now? It's like, what the hell am I going to talk about? That's right. I have this little problem of diarrhea of the mouth and hopefully not constipation of the brain, as we used to describe Summerall when he was doing the football hosting for CBS years ago. It's my stepfather's line. Guy's got diarrhea of the mouth and constipation of the brain. You could say that a lot about a lot of politicians, couldn't you? Yeah, Phase 5. I did see that Palin piece in the Sunday Telegraph in a yoga pose. Yeah. What a joke. You know, and I mean, only the Republicans could end up picking some MILF-looking woman who's totally unqualified and consider her the front runner for the presidential nomination in 2012. I mean, And don't even get me started on the press conference. I think she was so wired on something. All you could hear was her breathing in between. Fucking heart rate's going over. My head's gonna explode. And I bet even the guy who's running the PA for this thing sitting there going, Jesus, man, how can I get rid of this? This is just ridiculous. It's distracting. Spike Elizabeth Hasselbeck might be the nominee. You know what, man? That wouldn't surprise me one bit. You know, they just, you know, I think it's going to come down to bloody olive oil hair boy. Now, Spike, she didn't sniffle, since I'm wondering if whatever it was she took was smoked. But, you know, I've seen people like that before. I've seen people. And, yeah, you know, she probably was nervous and uptight about everything, you know, but, man, that was just rapid fire, just drivel. Sounded like a wired person to me. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying anything else. Oh, man. Okay. Tell you what we're going to do here. I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to try and replace this mic cable real quick. So that things are a bit cleaner. And see if I can bring a few stories up, which wouldn't be a bad thing. And for those of you that weren't listening to my show on the weekend or got so frustrated with the streaming that you dropped off, I played some music from an artist by the name of Joy, and it's from an album that kind of never really got released properly. This was originally attempted to be released in 96. Her backing band is Fishbone. And you just got to wonder about record labels sometimes when they'll have something that's this shit hot and refuse to release it because they just keep thinking that we just don't have the single yet. We got to have the song. And there's a particular artist here in Australia that I toured with for about 2 years where it was the same situation. Sonny just kept saying, yeah, but it doesn't have the single, some test marketing bullshit didn't actually give them the results of like, yeah, that's an engine number one, eh? When they actually had a really good solid record on their hands. But anyway, check this out. This is some really, really great stuff. Joy from Amoeba Cleansing Syndrome, the name of the album. You Turn Me On. See you back here in a few minutes.
Thank you. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. John Fox here, filling in for Bob Kincaid because he's, well, lost his internet tubage. And I now have a better microphone cable. See, I would have had it actually replaced before my show this weekend, but I wasn't expecting this. I got caught off guard. So, hey, let's see if we can push the envelope on this thing. I'm going to boot up the phones here. And if you feel so inclined, give a buzz. Now, just give me a second while I await its bootage. And, oh, hey, this will be fun. You can hear me crawl underneath my mixer to grab a cable that I need. And let's see. It's one of these moments where, like, another set of hands would be really, really handy. Ha 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 ha. Okay, we're almost there. Now, let's see. Will it play happy? That's looking kind of good. Just bear with me a second. Gonna make sure that it's all gonna play nice. Hey! Got a call already. Look at that. Except I accidentally hung up on you. Sorry. Try that again. Whoever that was. Ring back, please. And we should be good to go. So if you want to get in on things, it's 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. And let's see if we can get this thing happening. And I'm just trying to get a little configured here. And I'm being asked about where can they get that joy track. Yeah, I figured you'd dig that trouble, and I reckon Peter would absolutely adore this record. I have to get it to him. You can find out more at. Let's try this again. Hey, you're on Head On with Bob Kincaid. Who we got? We're gonna still have this garbage, are we? Folks, looks like the phones still aren't working from this weekend. Dang it, I hate this. You know, if I'd known I was going to be on, I would have actually checked this stuff out. But it seems as that this is very strange, because Bob and I could talk from one end to the other day after my show, but here, not so much. It's a bit of a drag. Drag. But hey, you get that. Sorry, Spike. You could hear me, and then, well, I couldn't hear whoever was ringing me, which I don't know why that is. Things have been a little bit on the flaky side for a bit now. Last week, Mike Taibbi, is that how you say his name? Released this piece, which really exposed the way Goldman Sachs kind of ends up being able to run roughshod over the country. And really, really making waves. And it was really interesting when the article first came out. You know, I was hearing about it on the horn, hearing Mike Malloy talk about it. And then about 2 days later, all the aggregating sites finally picked it up. There's another piece which I haven't even had a chance to get to read yet, but I reckon it'll be make fantastic reading. It was linked in the chat room earlier. I think it was Cossack that stuck it in the chat room. Vanity Fair's got another one here. The Man Who Crashed the World, and it's from Michael Lewis. Almost a year after AIG's collapse, despite a tidal wave of outrage, there still has been no clear explanation of what toppled the insurance giant. The author decides to ask the people involved, the silent, shell-shocked traders of the AIG Financial Products Unit, which finds that the story may have been a villain whose reign of terror over 400 employees brought the company, the U.S. economy, and the global financial system to their knees. Now, I haven't had a chance to read this article yet, but I reckon it's just going to be more ammunition to prove the fact that we need some bloody freaking regulation over the financial industry. I mean, all this deregulation, you know, I do remember when I was a kid when a bank was a bank, an insurance company was an insurance company, and financial advisors were financial advisors. And there was good reason for doing this. But we're showing, you know, bit by bit all the regulation. And it wasn't regulation to destroy business. It was regulation to protect business from itself. I think it's pretty, I think it's pretty obvious. Spike says, but John, the free market will wipe our asses. No, don't think so, mate. Yeah, Reem might be more right there, ELO. I'd say more like they'll take a dump on us. So, I mean, that's really what they, you know. And, in fact, over here in Australia, there was just a letter, the results of some sort of study group, actually pushing the Australian government to come down harder on our four major banks. And, you know, and the treasurer, you know, just kind of went like, no, our guys have been responsible. Yeah, they've been responsible in comparison to others, you know, other nations. But ever since the subprime thing, our four banks have gone from controlling 80% of the mortgage market to now 92% of the mortgage market. That screams lack of competition to me. And we've just been having a major, major thing here, and it happens to be the bank that I'm with. The Commonwealth Bank has had their internet banking system just kind of shit itself over the past week. And they're being very, very slow to refund people. I mean, people's mortgage payments didn't go through, you know. I mean, we're talking about, like, virtually every customer under the largest bank in Australia. Their system took a crap, and I've been reading some comments from some former employees saying that they love to do things on the cheap, and they probably, you know, they once had a totally internal IT firm or department dealing with the tech end of their banking, and then they outsourced it for cheaper. Funny how that ends up not working. You know, but I know it's not reported over there, but this little, you know, crazy little country that I live in here now is weathering this financial crisis better than any other developed nation on the planet. Why? Because we pushed through a huge stimulus package that actually got to people. Aside from the infrastructure stuff, there were actually cash deposits. All you had to do, if you filed a tax return, you had to do nothing. No paperwork, no application. If you filed a tax return, bang, deposited into your account was something like $900 Australian dollars. And, you know, Barack Obama, when Kevin Rudd was over in the United States shortly after Obama was inaugurated, you know, Obama did actually say, hi, you know, introducing Kevin Rudd, who has been listening to what all the economists are saying about the fact that this is the time to go into deficit. This is the time for the government to spend money. And it has worked. Now, we're not suddenly turning around and, you know, we're not booming. But the decline has slowed. The job loss slowed. Consumer confidence leveled off and didn't just fall into the shitter. Now, yeah, now that the original stimulus payments have been spent, you know, you're seeing a little bit of a decline. They're talking about doing it again. And it's working. It's working. Now, I'm really pissed off with Kevin Rudd on a lot of things. He's totally turned his back on all the environmental promises that he made. Cigarettes are about to go up to $20 a pack. So, you know, as incomes fall, they got to go and find some new tax revenue. Low-hanging fruit, go after the cigarette smokers. So, we're going... Yeah, yeah, phase five. If you didn't earn enough to pay tax, you didn't get it. It wasn't perfect, but it still was, you know, it's the best that any developed nation has done. And I still think that the infrastructure projects and whatnot still haven't actually, you know, gotten on totally online yet, and the down the road benefits still haven't shown. But, you know, if you failed, I'm not sure if you didn't earn enough money to pay tax, you didn't get it. I think if you didn't file, you didn't get it. But, you know, that's beside the point. That's beside the point. The whole point was is that they actually put some money out into the economy to be spent, which actually helped save jobs. It's not something you want to do all the time. And now, you know, we're having, over here, I mean, you know, small countries, you end up with somewhat comical political stunts. And so now we've got the opposition riding around in something that they did 20-something years ago with the debt truck driving through Australian cities going, look at labor's debt, look at labor's debt, look at this huge labor debt. And... you know, so we're going to end up with all those kind of games because they can't actually talk about the fact that the intention of that stimulus package pretty well worked. Pretty well worked. It kept the ass from falling out. And the Australian dollar is making gains kind of consistently and slowly on the U.S. dollar again. You know, after it was targeted on one weekend. Believe me, I saw this and I felt it. The Australian dollar, when the Australian dollar about a year ago was almost on parity with the U.S. dollar for the first time in decades since it was first floated. And then the global economic crisis started to kick in and somebody targeted the Australian dollar because they wanted to make sure that Australia's resources stayed cheap because the dollar lost 40% in a weekend. Over a weekend. I'm sorry, that only screams, you know, manipulation to me. That's just my opinion. But it wasn't just my opinion. There are quite a few local economists and whatnot here that were very, very suspect of what went down on that weekend. But, you know, I kind of wish that, like with this stimulus fight that we had here, I wish the Democrats would take a lesson from it. And, which was, labor used its majority that it won to push through what they thought was right. Instead of going, you know, they kind of held out the bipartisan hand, but just like the Republicans in the United States got back nothing but rhetoric with no numbers, which is really easy to do. And, you know, I mentioned this cigarette tax thing. Yeah, you know, it's low-hanging fruit stuff, Cossack. You know, Cossack says, I think it's rather wrong going after people's nicotine addictions. I totally agree. And these kind of things, it's easy to portray them as going, well, it's something that you shouldn't be doing anyway, so if you do it, you know, the old concept of the sin tax. And it makes it a really easy sell in politics. So it was easy, low-hanging fruit. I hate it. I think it's cheap and easy. But the no matter what party it was, would have gone after this when it, when they saw what their tax revenues estimates were going to be for the next year. So, you know, it's low-hanging fruit, easy pickings. You know, I mean, but then again, cigarette smokers in Australia can actually claim to supporting most of the single-payer health care that we have. Cigarette taxes pay more than the actual tax levy that everyone pays every year for the paying of health care in this country. So if that is kind of what continues that, I can almost deal with it. But I still think it's a cheap ploy. Gail's just completely irate about it. But see, there's this funny thing, though. We smoke, you know, we roll our own. Every time there's a tax increase, they go after the lazy people, those that buy the tailors. And they do it by pack. Not by weight or anything else. They do it by pack. And it's like stamp duty. So if you're too lazy to roll your own, you get hit even harder. Okay, Trouble's asking about how to get the joy music. you like that. Go to joi.info. That is one of her websites. And you can also go to myspace.com/joi. And from there, she's now actually released it herself. So, you know. And if David Fremaine was in, he'd show you exactly how to get it. But yeah, it's some pretty amazing music. Very, very sexy. Very, very, and it's all live. See, that's the thing. I can deal with that being called soul because it's played by actual humans. In these moments, it's really funny, you know, it's in these moments when taxable income is going down, there always, it doesn't matter what type of government you have, they're always going to go after the drinkers and the smokers, and just continue to bilk them, because they'll just, you know, when people are addicted to things that are legal, you know, so it brings me back to that thing. Hey, U.S. government, how about frickin' legalizing marijuana? It's time for cannabis to be legal. Time to tax it. Time to regulate it. You'll be able to use tax income for much better things than incarceration of nonviolent offenders. Hey, a few months ago, I covered a really, really great piece where a couple of economists ran the numbers in California, and just on the more conservative estimates of marijuana use in California, if growers paid a $50 per plant tariff, and buyers paid $5 an eighth tax, California would be in the black in 2 years. So if nationally you actually made it legal, regulated it, made it so like alcohol, children are not legally allowed to buy it, you'd have a lot less problem with young addiction if it weren't a black market. Spike says 2 months, man. No. They reckon they'd be able to get themselves back in the black and pay off their debt in 2 years. And that's a conservative low estimate. And that means also paying for every program that they would like to have. I mean, I heard that they were actually out there passing the hat to help pay for the cops that were doing traffic control and whatnot for for the Michael Jackson memorial.
Huh?
I actually saw a YouTube video earlier today, and it was in response to a clip of The American Drug War, The Last White Hope, which is a great film. And this video was just saying, you know, would the children in the government stop having these kindergarten-like arguments over cannabis? You know, I mean, it's like, you actually listen to the arguments that go on. They're completely uneducated. They use fear, 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 fear. And they argue like little kids. Nah, I know you are, but what am I? I know you are, but what am I? And it's just like, let's grow up. Let's treat adults like adults. It's actually one of the things that I still do like about Barack Obama. Is the fact that when he does talk to the American people, he talks to us like we're adults. Now, that hasn't exactly turned out to be, you know, in policy, everything that we'd wished for. But, you know, and with Al Franken getting into the Senate, you know, a lot of people are going to be saying, you know, oh, we got a comedian in there. You know, I bet you he's going to end up being one of the most serious senators because he is a policy wonk. Agree with his views or not, he's a devil for detail. And, you know, maybe it'll take a comedian to actually say, hey, you know what? I'm not joking here. Let's debate like adults and not little spoiled children. Because unfortunately, that's what the Senate is. It's one of the, you know, it's like the most exclusive club in the world. You know, I can't remember which film it is. It might actually be, I think it's called Grass. I think it might be the Woody Harrelson one. And they do this, there's this amazing, you know, they follow a few different personal stories. And one of them is this young girl, might live in Texas, possibly, I could be wrong, who suffers, it's either cerebral palsy or MS, I'm not sure which. But they show her talking about, you know, she's a mother, loves her kids. And they show her for ages talking about, while not having smoked anything, what marijuana, cannabis, does for her. It makes her a better mother. You follow her, and then you finally get to this point where she, you know, leaves her kids with her mother so she can go and put her entire life on the line to go and score a little bit of cannabis. And after that, they go back to her house. And she's talking, all the same twitching and everything else, and she sits there and she takes about two tokes, and within less than 60 seconds, you watch the twitching and the convulsions and everything just absolutely just abate. Her speech becomes crystal clear. And then suddenly there's only just this hint of the ailment that absolutely wrecks her life. And it makes it possible for her to be able to be a good mother. It heals her pain. And, you know, if that doesn't say at all of the unfairness and the absolute just, I don't know, lack of compassion that this so-called war on drugs has been for the world. I mean, you know, bizarre, you know, it just gets us into such mess. You know, could it finally be this financial disaster might actually push us into sanity when it comes to this? Now, a bunch of people, you know, that are against this will say, hey, you're just pushing for medical use because you want to be able to smoke pot legally yourself. Well, you know what? Yeah, maybe that is true. But it still doesn't change the fact that my argument is spot on. You know that the United States actually holds a patent, owns the patent on THC, and their patent actually shows and states that it has medicinal value? So the current law and the war against drugs actually goes against the very patent on the chemical that the U.S. government owns. You know, and then, you know, get on to AIDS, you know, AIDS victims where the medication and the disease makes them not be able to eat and wither off and die. You know, there's two side effects to cannabis. Damn, I'm hungry. Boy, I'm feeling a bit sleepy. Now, those two side effects can be of great benefit to sick people. Not only that. Forget what they call it, but there's this therapeutic scale that they use of and basically what it is, the range of the dosage between therapeutic value and overdose. And cannabis has one of the highest. In other words, it takes 40,000 times the therapeutic dose to be fatal. And since it's so sleepy, it's kind of self-regulating. In fact, it is probably the most self-regulating drug in the world. You know, you'd have to physically consume and eat like 2 pounds or more really fast. No one could possibly smoke enough to be fatal. But yet, take too many Panadine or Panadol, and your liver will shut down. It really is insane. You know, I mean, it's one of the things that I'm kind of thankful for here in Australia is that there's a bit of a wink and a nod thing when it comes to use. You know, it's technically not legal, but... And anytime there's a big bust, it's because some idiot didn't pay their power bill. That's usually what happens. Because I have a friend who works for one of the power companies, and he said he fears the fact that he might be responsible for some of the, you know, or people like him are responsible for some of the bigger busts because they get sent out to a place that where they haven't heard from anybody, and they now have laws in place because, unfortunately, you know, there have been cases here in Australia where, you know, someone dies in their house and ends up not being found for months. So one of the things that the power companies do, if they actually go to do a visit to shut things down, they actually have to go and do a knock on the door. And if they can't find somebody and it's been for a while, they do have to contact the police out of just general public do-goodiness. I don't have a problem with that. You know, and actually, you know, a few years ago, there was a little cafe up at King's Cross in the city here in Sydney that you go in, have a really nice gourmet cup of coffee or herbal tea and some really, really nice, you know, muffins and cookies and stuff like that. And they pretty openly sold little bags of cannabis. And the local cops just let it happen. Because there was never any problems or fights over there. It also took the dealing off the street. And it reduced the crime in the area. Now, it was allowed to run for a long time. But then suddenly this moment came up where, you know, people, you know, rich white people, most likely, who went and moved into the area and were trying to clean it up. Because, I mean, King's Cross, this is where all the strip clubs are. And, you know, I mean, it's like Decadence Alley in Sydney. I mean, and that's okay, too. And I remember sitting in that cafe a couple times, and there was a big old dance club right across the way. And almost every weekend, there would be a whole bunch of cops pulling up to there, dealing with some drunk, numbnuts, overly macho idiots, having a big old biffo, having to drag them out, blood, bruising, women being hit, and all kinds of nasty stuff. And you could actually see the cops look over, look straight into this place that was actually doing what was technically an illegal trade. And you could see it almost in the cops' eyes of, like, going, yep, this is why we let you do what you do. How did I get on that? Okay. I'm going to take a little break here, and because I got a couple comments that it was really, really enjoyed, I'm going to play something else from Joy here and come back, and I'll see if I can dig up a link for the chat room. And actually, if you want to find, go to the show post from my show this past weekend at foxedup.headonradionetwork.com, and you can find all the info on Joy there. But I'll go and get it myself and stick it in the chat room. So, let's see, is this the one? No, that ain't it. No? Ah, this is good. If I'm lucky, I just might get picked up. You listen to the Head On Radio Network. This is Head On with Bob Kincaid, John Fox, subbing in for a bit. We'll be back after this.
Do it.
I sent over into the chat room a few links for where to find Joy. And like I said, you can find her at myspace.com/JOI and also at joi.info. And you can read up on why this album actually never got released by not just one label, but two labels. But she's now released it herself. We've all turned like the legalized drug talk in on this show, but hey, you know, it is actually a much more serious issue than the immature dialogue that happens in government, you know, would make you believe. You know, we're dealing with billions thrown down the shitter. Locking up people who didn't do anything violent, people who didn't do anything that actually was, you know, harmful to the greater society. And, you know, if you want to use that argument of me, it's like, well, and while they're illegal and you got to deal with the black market and everything. Well, it's because of the law that you've generated that frickin' black market. And like Kosek said in the chat room, you know, down there in Florida, we have the same thing every year up in Queensland, you know, spring break comes. And there's always some reported, you know, kid that ends up going through alcohol poisoning because of binge drinking. Still, to date, there has never been, ever been a documented case of someone dying due to the use of cannabis. Now, not saying that someone didn't go and get really, really fucked up and then went and drove a car and got in an accident, that's different. That was being irresponsible and driving when impaired. Just like, you know. See, this is where I say, you know, instead of making the whole thing illegal and black market, make it legal and regulated. Yeah, I was saying that before, Cossack, you know. It takes a hell of a lot to overdose. Basically, effectively impossible to overdose. And you're going to fall asleep. You know, anytime I've gotten on this subject, comes screaming back into my head is a monologue from Bill Maher back in the old Politically Incorrect days. And it went something like this. In any city in America, on any day, you can pick up the local paper, open up the police blotter, and you'll read at least one report. Someplace, somewhere, some guy went out, got drunk, came home, beat his wife. The one thing you never read about on the police blotter is some guy going out, getting stoned, and coming home and beating his wife. Maybe getting stoned and forgetting to beat his wife. It's a joke. But I think it says volumes. And just like, you know, you don't hear of like gang wars and whatnot in you know, where the coffee houses are in Holland, do you? No. Not at all. You know, sometimes get asked by people, not people involved with this network, but people who don't see the world as we do, say, you know, why do you still live down there? Why don't you come back to America? And it's like, well, there's a few reasons. One, I kind of like it where I am. Two, this country is so much more civil to one another than the United States. Here's another thing. Get this. I don't know if this has changed or not. I hope this has changed. But if I wanted to come back, and you know, certain things could dictate that one day I have to go back for whatever reason. But if I wanted to go back and stay for a while, and I wanted to bring Gail with me, very possibly, because she at one time did have hepatitis C, which is now cured, she might not be allowed to live in the United States because of her now non-existent hepatitis C, because she could be too much of a burden on the non-existent fucking healthcare system. I mean, how stupid is that? They're going to keep people that could very possibly add value to the nation. My missus is one smart woman. Because you might end up being a burden on a healthcare system you don't even have. What asshole actually came up with that logic? Just saying. Ooh, Spike, yeah. Hep can be nasty, and the treatment for Hep C is really, really new. It's still really, on the experimental phase. Not experimental that they don't know whether it works or not, but they're still developing and refining the treatment all the time. The doses of the medications that my missus was on were really, really tiny compared to the doses they were giving to people just 2 years before. And from what I understand now, a couple of years out from her ending treatment, they're actually able to shorten treatment, because I'm telling you, interferon is one of those cures you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy. It's horrible stuff. And even Gail's doctor, because there was a law change that made Gail qualify for being able to get treatment in the public health care system. Before that, technically, she didn't apply. But this doctor said, look, he said, if I had met her even before the law was changed, I would have found a way to get her into treatment, because I understand that treating her now saves the system lots more money down the road for when she ends up with things like liver cancer. So, you know, I get all that greatest country in the world nonsense, and it's just like, sorry. First of all, I don't want to live in a place that wants to be the greatest country in the world. I want to live in a country that wants to be the great, you know, really good to its people. Not out to beat everybody else down and pump so much hot air up their asses that they can't even see. You know, that's why I like to live here. I also like to live here because there's not a gun everywhere. And it was even a super ultra-conservative government that actually put in gun control laws. And it was a really good thing. I can have discussions with my right-wing neighbor and not worry about us getting into a shootout. You know, I this horrible thing with the, and I'm glad that it appears that they got him, this serial killer that was, you know, just absolutely putting that whole bloody community into just, you know, terrorizing them. But, you know, I saw a report here, and you know, an Australian report on it. You know, they're talking to some guy sitting on, yep, got my guns. Got one right here. Pulls out his 9mm from his pocket. He's like, yep, got one in the truck. Got one. And I'm sitting there thinking, holy crap, this is a recipe for disaster. He's going to end up having one of his own kids spook him, and he's going to shoot him. Phase 5 in the chat room is backing me up on that. He says, I'm happy I'm in Australia. My medication costs $3.50 a month for $2,000 worth of drugs, and I can move again. And no guns. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, you're allowed to have, you know, rifles and stuff like that, you know, for hunting. But, you know, there's no handguns here. You know, there aren't carry permits here. What fucking idiot thinks it's a good idea to just flood the black market with more what once were legal guns. Most of the illegal guns that get out there were once legally purchased guns that are either stolen, lost, or sold. So the whole thing's been going, yeah, but you can't be prejudiced against a law-abiding, God-fearing gun owner. Yeah, but it's that fucking idiot's gun that ends up becoming the illegal gun. When his kid wants actual more drug money, he goes off and sells it to the kids in the city. And most of the guns that end up in Mexico that are creating all that terror down there came from our side of the border. Mostly from gun shows. What's to hunt in Australia? Kangaroos? Well, yeah, actually there are. But, you know, I mean, you know, I have complaints about this place too, but they're pale in comparison to the lunacy of what happens in the United States. And there's some really, really simple things. Gun control being one of them. Universal health care being another. I have arguments with certain members of my family all the time. They're against a single payer, but yet they will admit that they don't even know what it means. And it's like, and you want to have a debate with me on this? And the environment. Hey, well, you know, I don't believe in that global warming. How many studies have you read? Well, none. And I disagree with everything you say. I am. You want to have a debate with me on this, and you know nothing about the subject. Uh-huh. Not saying that I know everything, but I've read a shitload, and I continue to read. There's this thing called the preponderance of evidence that has come down on the side of something's going really squirrely, and we are the cause. You can actually track down when the change accelerated, and it was the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. And the connection between carbon and temperature has been going back for a couple of years, in fact. Back to the black soot days in England. Scientists were already making the connection. Well, I've managed to rage on for about an hour and a half here. I'm hoping Bob will be able to be all sorted out and back tomorrow. Not knowing why his internet has gone. Hopefully it's something that will be sorted out before tomorrow. And as usual, this network it belongs to you folks, and we need you all to chip in. You know how to do it. The PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com or over at White Rose. 20% of all donations to White Rose come back to the Horn. So if you're torn, that's the way to deal with that. And Ben Birch, you know, he makes so much possible, not just for the Horn, but for lots of other people that we really, really, really like. Like Mr. Hartman and various other folks. Mike Malloy, our buddy. And, you know, boy, now I just got to find that closing song of Bob's. Where is that? Do I have it? I should have it. There it is. I have it. So, thanks everybody for playing along with me here this evening. As nice one, Spike. He's gone and done a little bit here, a little bit there, and yeah, and of course, Guy James, because you know he supports his own system there outside of the Horn, even though he's a valuable and key member of this network. And until such time as we get underwritten properly, this is the way it is. But it's all, it is what it is. But as usual, thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch and Coal River Wind for all that they do, their hard work. And I think that they're finally, you know, the issue of mountaintop removal is really starting to become a national thing, and might actually be on the way to having some of the major change that they've been working for. And true victory never comes quickly. It comes slow and steady. And there's a good example. Again, thanks to Ben Birch of the White Rose Society. Thanks to Gail for the use of her laptop again. And as always, RMR, it's all for you.